3,000 and counting. That's how many of your original short stories we've received so far in our 3-Minute Fiction Summer Writing Contest. That works out to about 150 hours of fiction, and it's kept all of us here pretty busy, but it's also been great fun. And I hope it's also been fun for our series guide, James Wood, who's been reading steadily as well. James, welcome back.
Thank you.
So did you have any idea of what you were getting into when we launched this series a few weeks back?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's overwhelming. It's huge.
Let's just quickly recap the rules. We asked our listeners to send us original works of fiction that can be read in about 3 minutes or less, so roughly 500 words. And we're going to announce a winner in a few weeks. But in the meantime, James, could you read us some passages from some of the stories you liked?
Yeah. One of them is by Molly Reed, entitled Not That I Care. And it falls into that category of someone remembering a lost love, but it really avoids any of the pitfalls of sentimentality and is full of vividness. It begins like this. There goes our neighbor Jim running into the street again. He grabs one of the ducks crossing, doesn't even look to see if anyone is looking, just scampers out, hunched over, elbows bent, and reaching behind him like he's trying to grow wings or is throwing himself to the asphalt, then scoops a duck and holds it with both hands close to his chest, and runs back into his house. This has been going on for 2 weeks, started around the time Marcus left, or at least that's when I first noticed it. That's the beginning, and the story keeps you close to it because of the way she deals with details. So a little bit later, the narrator talks about looking out of the window and chewing off the extra tiny bits of skin inside my cheeks. And then a little bit later, a very vivid detail, she says, when Marcus left, he left behind a pair of dirty socks, one hiding under the bed and one right in plain sight, curled into itself and getting smaller every day like a sad little salted slug. It's that kind of thing that I'm looking for in a story that just makes the whole piece immediately alive.
And in that case, the language is very clean.
Yes, and I think the strongest stories here understand that you're probably going to have to make the thing fairly spare and simple, and push it on with voice.
We'll read us some more.
Yeah, well, to give you an example of voice, here's a terrific little story called Plum Street by Bernard Mendillo, and it just begins like this. In the fifth grade, there was a boy named Plum Street. That wasn't his real name. We called him Plum Street because he came from the project. Even the nuns called him Plum Street. Sister Mary Snapper, we called her the Whip, didn't like Plum Street and beat him nearly every day for something. Where's your homework? The Whip would ask. I ain't got no homework, Plum Street would sneer. And no matter how many times she hit him with a pointer over the hand, he would never cry. He wasn't afraid of her. He wasn't afraid of anything. Now that's pretty much the model, I would say, of what I'm looking for. And I think it shows us what detail does, which is to speed us into a made world, in this case, the world of the school child.
James, reading through some of these stories myself, I've noticed some wonderful titles. The Communist from Pasadena, Sleeping with Leopold Bloom, the Last Days of Entropy. They almost seem to be like little stories of their own, just in the titles.
That's right. And I think that those writers understand that every sentence speaks, including the title. The title itself can be a gnomic sign for something to come. You mentioned The Last Days of Entropy. I selected that for this week because it's one of the few linguistically daring and experimental stories we've had. Most of them are pretty committed to standard realism. And this is written in an entirely made-up, futuristic sort of computer language. It's by Ming Ivor. It's called The Last Days of Entropy. It begins like this. The experiment has come a cropper on a public key for the archive. A good day? The pumps work and thinking is easy, but I've noticed a quant of anomalies lately and thought I'd better document the glitchy in case my fix flops and I'm hauled up on incompetence. And so it goes on like that. She even uses the verb Orwelling. So, in fact, I suspect they've been Orwelling blueprints for so long, few really know. It's great.
Yeah.
And I choose it because I think it's, you know, one should reward the more daring writer like that.
James Wood is literary critic at The New Yorker, as well as the guide and judge of our series, 3-Minute Fiction. James, thanks so much and happy reading.
Thank you very much.
And James will announce our winning story in a few weeks. If you want to enter or read some of the stories highlighted today, go to our website. That's npr.org/3-Minute Fiction. That's 3-Minute Fiction, all spelled out, no spaces. And thanks to everyone who's written in so far.